pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Running is the greatest metaphor for life because you get out of it what you put into it. Oprah Winfrey's beautiful words ring true with our guest today, Shreyas Karnad. Shreyas is popularly called Coach Shreyas and is a running coach who helps people run better. He started to run in 2009 when he was 120 kilos and today weighs 60 kgs. After a 10-year stint in the corporate world, he took on coaching full-time in 2016. Since then, he has coached over 1,000 people across various spheres of life to run better, longer, and faster, rekindling the joy of running in each one of them. Listen in as Coach Shreyas shares the divine connect that he sees in running and the amazing work that he has been part of. Such a pleasure meeting you, Shreyas. After listening and hearing about all that you do to motivate your coaches, a warm welcome to You and I with Rashmi Shetty. And on this platform, You and I stands for the uniqueness and individuality each one of us bring in when we lead our lives and choose what we want to do. So how was little Shreyas like to Coach Shreyas that you're famously known as today? Take us through your journey.
Firstly, thank you, Rashmi, for getting me here. It's a privilege to share my story and really appreciate the concept. So yes, you and I think we're all unique, and that's what makes us human. And that is why we're a rare species where we can evolve with our uniqueness and yet blend with our stories. So thanks again. So little Shreyas was very contrasting to what Coach Shreyas is. I'm 36 now. Most of my childhood life, I was on the heavier side, but very active, bubbling with a lot of energy, but didn't know where to put that energy in. I wasn't really great at academics, but I always wanted to play a sport and I wanted to be a cricketer. I dreamt of it. And I was pretty good at the sport, but I wasn't agile. I could play for 12, 13 hours, but I was not really fast, on the field, and I used to get bullied. And that was the only sport that we knew at that point of time. And you didn't get much support. Back home, because everybody wanted you to study well, get a job, and then, happily settle after, which doesn't happen to everyone. That's part of which, we push that agenda. So there is no happily ever settling. So which didn't work for me. The sport didn't work for me. So I was still a bundle of energy. I didn't know what to do. And I was a pretty restless kid. So I would say I'm bored all the time. So I was quite a menace and I was pretty mischievous. I never had any direction. Like, for example, if some kids, they always had a direction. They were very clear. They want to be an engineer. They want to be a doctor. I didn't know. So I was not great at math and science. So doctor, engineer, IIT all ruled out. So, but somehow I made it to school. That's great to school and went to college. And then finally just cleared my, BCom. And that was my last bit of a formal education. So that was how I was. I never thought, I'll become a coach or get into a sport and become a full-time athlete. I always call myself an athlete than a coach. First, I'm an athlete and then a coach, and both these two, bring a lot more meaning to my life and make my human aspect a lot more better.
Yeah, very beautifully said. The human aspect a lot better. When you were talking about being bullied and being forced to study and studies was not something which was a priority to you. There are a lot of children in that space even today. What would you tell parents who push their children saying, 10th board exam, you do well, then your life is set. 12th board exam, you do well, your life is set. And we all know life is never set. So as an athlete, because there's so much about life you learn when you turn athlete, and there's so much you get in touch with yourself in that journey to become an athlete. Looking back, what would you like to tell those parents who have kids in those very impressionable ages about sport? And when it's near board exams, every sport is off the radar. So what would you tell those parents? How should they handle the children and their energies?
I think having a balanced perspective helps a lot, right? And you don't just prep them up for a job, you prep them up for life. So a life means you need to know how to take care of yourself, your fitness, your health, and of course your career too. Not everybody would want to be an athlete. Not everybody would want to be a coach, right? Even some children are driven by themselves. You know, a lot of people, you know, I know a few IAS and IPS officers, they were very driven, you know, right from the childhood, you know, because of the background they came or their grooming, or, you know, the hunger was always there to do something big. And many of us do not have even hunger. So it's extremely difficult to narrow down how to be with kids because there are many variables there. But yet, I think we always can maintain a, you know, balanced perspective. But that being said, I think in today's world, it's extremely, extremely important to train kids on non-cognitive skills, such as discipline, taking ownership, taking responsibility, you know, and most importantly, empathy, compassion, and patience. These three is something that is really, really lacking among today's kids, because when there is no patience, you will lose empathy and compassion. And how to, you know, make relationships and how to carry them. Because today's kids are living in a fast instant world. You know, you sit at home, you press a button, everything comes. So there's no patience. Like when there is no patience, you know, you don't appreciate things that much. And going forward, and how things are evolving every 3 years, when the world is changing so fast. The world is not the same 3 years back, right? And if kids cannot adapt to the changes, it's going to be really, really difficult. But yeah, keep them outside the comfort zones, challenge them in ways that, you know, that'll help them cope up better with the world, and you know, teach them these non-cognitive skills, you know, life skills, you know, extremely important. You know, as simple as climbing a tree is, you know, swimming, extremely important, right? You know, climbing a mountain, you know, and make them do some strength workout. You know, teach them to be independent at the same time, also be accountable for themselves. Rest all, I don't think there's a big difference between 90% and 100% today. I think everybody's going to score 90%. So you don't have to worry about that. You know, like in our times, because there was so much of competition, maybe 20, 30 years back, there were few jobs. But today there are a lot of jobs. Khana Peena Sona is not the incentive to study anymore. Right. Yeah, So we are fortunate, you know, that if you don't study, you don't get a job and don't make money. That's not the case now. But now the challenge is to how to handle the things that you have, and how to handle yourself, and how to manage yourself. These are the challenges that you're going to face. I think that is what we need to teach kids. But unfortunately, even as parents, we lack that. You know, I know, for example, you know, forget our parents. Even our grandparents are on the phone all the time. Yeah. People in the 60s, 70s, they are on the phone all the time. So if you can get away with it, you know, come in terms with reality, I think we can do our kids a lot more favor.
True, we can do our kids a big favor, and that is when you're objective, okay? But tell me about Shreyas growing up into this athlete. What is it you discovered? Were your friends into sports that you got into becoming an athlete? Because you said you love describing yourself as an athlete and a coach, and then a coach. So tell me this journey from little Shreyas to athlete Shreyas. What was it all about?
Yeah. So I started working when I was 20. So I mean, when I came to college, I always wanted to do an MBA, you know, those are the times, 2005, 2006, were the times where you could open newspaper, you see, you know, somebody's drawing 1 crore, 1.5 crore, IIM is in big records. And I said, okay, this is my last hope, you know, no engineer, no doctor. And if you do a BCom, you'll probably end up in a call center or, you know, a BP of that sort, which is going to do, though colleges term, fancy terms like analyst and executive, but you're just doing a back-end job. You know, you're just there to do, you know, a little bit of data entry, and you know, that's about it, right? Nothing creative. And like I said, right from childhood, I was pretty restless. So, but I started working at the age of 20. I couldn't do an MBA for various reasons, you know, financial reasons and many of the personal problems. And I was a little frustrated because I was pretty smart, though I was not academically well. I felt I always was pretty smart. And after 2 years of working, I was pretty sad. I'm like, you know, what is this life? You know, we're just waking up. That way I was working in weird shifts, like 12 in the afternoon to 12 in the night. And I started eating a lot of food, junk food, and depression kind of eating. You know, my circadian rhythm had gone for a toss, and sleeping at 2 o'clock in the morning, waking up at 10, not seeing the sun, just going and sitting in AC, and I blew up 220 kgs. And I wanted to change my job. But I was in such a bad state that, you know, even my formal shirt button used to pop out. My stomach was that big. My pant buckle was not fitting. My waist was 46, huge. Yes. So I was barely 22, 23. I said, enough was enough. You know, I need to do something about this. Of course, you know, people at home, they were saying, you have to do something about this. If not, you're not going the right direction. And yeah, and I was very sad. And at the same time, there's a lot of pressure from home to get married. And then I remember this incident that, you know, it's just an arranged, you know, how arranged marriage was set up. Right? So we'd gone to see one of the girls, and every day you see 4 or 5 girls. And one of the incidents is where the girl's mother came up and she looked at my father, the broker, and I said, who's the guy among all these people? Because my father was a lot more slimmer and smarter than me. And that, I was like shocked. Even that didn't, that embarrassed me. I was like, it's okay. Big deal, who cares? But then there was one instance where, you know, the alliance was set up and everything, and the girl was pressurizing to get married to me, and she was pretty, you know, everything and whatnot. And then finally I got to know that, you know, she didn't really like me because, you know, I was really on the heavier side. I didn't look presentable. And then finally it didn't work out. I came home and I was sitting, this was around 2009, about 14 years back, and there's this movie called Varnamayiram. It's a Tamil movie. So Varnamayiram means a strength of 1,000 elephants. So it was around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was sitting and watching the movie. I was clueless, you know, things were not working out. Job was not going the right direction. I had no motivation. I was lazy, lethargic, self-esteem all-time low. And your 20s is where you should be bubbling with ambition. All the right energy, taking the world on. But here I am, feeling hopeless, didn't know what to do. And so there is a line in that movie where Surya says that, you know, whenever there is an emotional pain, give your body a lot more pain in terms of a workout. So he says, keep your body ready. It will help you in ways that you don't even know. So that's when I immediately shut on the laptop and I went and joined a local gym, just paid about 200, 300 rupees. I joined the gym and I could not even jog for 10 seconds. But then I just kept trying. And eventually it took me about 6 months to jog that for 30 minutes, 6 months, you know, to jog 30 minutes. But I felt so liberated. You know, the sweat was pouring down. I was just sitting. And after that, also, I stopped meeting my friends, the kind of friends who were not really productive for me, you know, with whom I could not, you know, grow, you know, who were just there, who were also trying to keep you down to wherever they are. So I disconnected with all of them. I spent a lot of time by myself. I changed jobs. I was working out 4 hours, 5 hours a day. So I cleaned up my eating and I changed jobs. So I got better jobs. I got promotions. Then I got married. Then I had a child and I traveled all over the world. And I was running, started running marathons. I picked up cycling. You know, my whole cycle of friends changed. But again, I'm still in the corporate world, you know, it's again the same Monday morning, you know, and then you're looking forward for Friday, you know, 8-10 hours. Like I said, I was restless. I could not sit at a place and work. I always wanted to be on the move. My job was pretty exciting. But in 2013, I was in Singapore, was on a project there, working there, and I had a coach for myself. I like this life, you know. So it was cool, you know, he's always in shorts and t-shirts. You know, training people, coaching people. So I put in a lot of money to learn from him. So while my peers were there saving money, I was spending a lot of money. All the per diem that you get, I was busy spending on him. But that's one of the best things I could do because I learned a lot of stuff from him. Then I came back and running was just picking up, you know, in India at that point of time. And people were still price conscious, especially in Bangalore. Nobody will still pay for a coach. And when you say a coach, they look up to someone who's really senior, you know, who they can revere, they can respect, they can call him, sir, I'm just in 20s. And then I was like, you know, I didn't know how to start. And finally, what had happened, I met with a bike accident. I had fallen off the bike. And I was supposed to get a promotion and I was supposed to go to Geneva. And I came home and I took a call. I had a call and I took the call. And then I removed my trousers and then saw there was a big crush wound below my knee from the fall and the flesh had come out. I didn't even realize because I was in such a hurry. And I suddenly went to the doctor, did an x-ray, and then I got it stitched. I came back. I could not bend my knee for a month. I was sitting from the bed and working. After that, I started experiencing all sorts of pain in the neck, pain in the lower back, pain in my glutes, hamstrings, all sorts of weird pains. The first time in 7 years, I'm experiencing a pain and, you know, 1 month off, not moving, no running. And then after the stitches were healed, I tried to get to running, but everything was hurting, you know, all my lower back. I had strange kind of pains. And then I could not sit for long and work. Okay, I could not travel for work. I could not sit for long and work. And I started getting into of anxiety and depression kind of a thing because I was, my back used to hurt so much. I could not even pick up my daughter, who was about like 5 or 6 kilos then. And then my performance dipped, you know, from someone who was performing high, my performance dipped. I didn't get promotion. I couldn't go on site because with so much of pain, I couldn't even go on site. And then I was wondering what to do, you know, after working so hard, you know, again, my career is gone for a toss, you know, again, my performance is going down now. There's no point in quitting here and going to some other place where, you know, I can't live up to expectations. At least here, you can still survive. But the goal is not to survive. The goal is to thrive and do well. And somewhere, some good karma. I think in the same year earlier, I had cycled about 700 kilometers across 3 or 4 days to raise funds for Isha Vidya. Isha Vidya is an offshoot of Isha Foundation where they educate kids from rural areas. So I had cycled around close to about 700 kilometers to raise funds for 4 kids. So they did a small little documentary. This was prior to the accident, the same year prior to the accident. And a year later, I was wondering what to do. And I got a call from them saying, you know, can you come and train a few of their monks? You know, they have a few monks. They wanted the monks to run, all right? They wanted them to be fit because they wanted to use them to run in these 10K events. So I said, okay, great, I'll go there. I spent about 3 or 4 days in Isha Foundation in Coimbatore. It was a great experience, very overwhelmed. And I went in, you know, and I thought a little bit of whatever I learned to the monks, and they were very happy. Then I came back to Bangalore. And then, so Isha Vidya have a lot of volunteers across the world. So Bangalore has got about, like, I think, over 1,000 odd volunteers, out of which 50 of them wanted to train for a 10K. So they again approached saying, can I train them, you know, for a 10K race? This was about 6-7 years back in 2016, 6 years back, I think, yeah, around this time after Mahashivratri. And I said, okay, I'll train. And I trained them for about 3 months. Everybody ran the 10K very successfully. And I said, you know, not bad, you know, 50 people are turning up, you know, thrice a week. And I said, okay, let me try this as a living. And I took a sabbatical from work. So I had not quit my job yet. I took a sabbatical from my work for 6 months. I tried this. I was making about some money, you know. It was an unpaid sabbatical, so I was making some money. but it's not getting my, you know,
yeah,
side of my workspace. But those 6 months of sabbatical taught me a lot. You know, first is that the importance of, you know, living a minimalistic life. You know, I cut down on all the non-essentials, and I cut down my luxury, I cut down on eating outside, I start taking metro, taking buses to everywhere. Then I realized, you know, we overwork ourselves for unnecessary comfort and materials, leaving our family, leaving our, you know, kids, you know, wasting a lot of time and wasting that money that we, you know, yeah, earned. And it was a very interesting experience. Then I realized, you know, if you have good health and a good family, you need very little in life.
Mm.
You know, the first thing is good health, right? And if you have good relationship and, you know, if you have a good connection with God, you know, you need very little. So there's a lot of difference between happiness and pleasure. So a lot of us are always chasing pleasure, you know, the kind of stuff that satisfies the ego, not our soul. So happiness is a soul thing and pleasure is the ego thing. And I was very happy during the 6 months, you know. I was so happy that, you know, though I was making 15, 20, 30,000 rupees a month, I was still okay. I was not saving anything, but I was genuinely very happy. And I was having a lot of time for myself, because I used to go coach in the morning. I used to walk 3 kilometers to the metro, from there another 2 kilometers, you know, and I was hardly spending 20, 30 rupees a day. I'd come down to one meal a day. I was only eating lunch. I was fasting. And I was feeling that I was always in touch with God. You know, what kind of feelings what I had then. I went back to workplace and I said, you know, I don't need this job. I will quit. I will continue with this. That's how I became a coach.
That sabbatical that gave you the courage to give up your job?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, okay. So, okay, Shreyas, before you go ahead, this was a very beautiful phase in your life. Just listening to it seems magical. The connection with the divine, and also getting into coaching other people to run, and that to run marathons. Yeah. So how did you build your curriculum? How did you build that framework of coaching? Was it verbatim what you studied with your coach in Singapore that you tried to practice with these people? Or did you bring in the Shreyas element to find out what can be the signature Shreyas athlete who can now start putting your mark, leaving a mark behind in people? How did the whole thing come together?
I felt that it was extremely important to understand people.
Mm.
You know, I started becoming a very good listener. Like I said, I was pretty restless, means I was also impatient.
Mm.
I was impatient. I was also a bit egoistic. I had a sense of arrogance in me. That's what the corporate world does to you. You're always arrogant. You're always on the job. But when I started coaching, I realized I'm nothing. You know, the kind of amazing people I met, you know, high achievers, they can still be grounded. Technical skills are very easy. All right. So yes, I did apply, you know, whatever I learned. And I also had my own journey, right? You know, because I knew when I was fat and was unfit and how it transformed, which means I know the pain what people could go through, right? If I was a born athlete, that's a very different thing. Now you go to someone who's a great athlete right from beginning, he will not understand your pain. He'll say, just run. If I can, you can do it. But I know the pain what a person goes through, you know, from that 120 kgs to whatever. So I was always empathetic. You know, that's the first thing I, you know, started including in my way of coaching. I started bringing in a sense of empathy. I started listening to people. I became a little more slow in talking. I'm actually a very, very fast talker. Even now, if you can see, you know, I'm still trying to learn how to speak. So, you know, my rate of speech came down a little bit. Then, I, you know, when in the morning when they came, I always used to ask, you know, how was the day yesterday? What's the plan today? So based on that, I used to treat them, because, you know, people come with different emotions, right? You know, we are all working class people. We have families, we have everything, but yet, you know, we wake up 4:35 o'clock in the morning. They don't want to come and, you know, get, you know, screamed at, right? They wanted someone where they can understand, tweak the program accordingly. So I started bringing a lot of that human element that was always lacking at the workspace, you know, which I didn't really like. And that is my signature of training. Understand people, help them find their own potential. Like you said, I believe that everybody's unique, you know, to help people understand their uniqueness, groom it, appreciate it, and find your own path and, you know, be true to it. So that is what I, you know, adopt in my coaching method as well, because I personally believe that anything that we do should lead to self-knowledge. That is what this land teaches us, right? You know, the job or the family, everything is about discovering yourself, right? Forget what others are doing. So embrace your strengths, embrace your weaknesses, you know, both physically as well as, you know, mentally. And, you know, we work towards that. So that is what I bring to my coaching. And so far, touch wood, God's grace, it's worked fantastically well. And so since then, I've coached over 1,000 people across various walks of life. And now I have a team which coaches people. So it's been a great journey so far.
And when it comes to the journey that began, let's go back to you getting into running, okay? Looking back, what is it that running taught you? Because I've heard a lot of people say that running is meditation. Running is the best time, which is my time. I know a lot of my friends who run because they say that that is the time, there's nothing else. Everything else is shut off. It's only me with myself. So what is it, if you can kind of dissect the process for me about running, Shreyas? Because you've been through a typical journey of somebody who was not very healthy to a completely mindful, aware person. So how has running helped you evolve to the human being you've now become?
Yes, running is meditation, like what many people say, because you're in a zone, you know, you are in a zone that it's very unexplainable, you know, a zone that gives you strength, a zone that gives you, you know, a power and self-belief. And some people say it's their time with the God, you know, it's the time with the God, you know, that's what some people believe. For me, it's everything. You know, some days I'm in a zone, you know, where I'm just lost. I don't even know what's happening. And some days I'm just smiling, you know, breathing, just appreciating, you know, the air, just looking at the trees, just looking at the birds, you know. And some days where, you know, I'm gutting it out, going really, really hard, you know, pushing my body to the limits. So it is everything that you can be. You know, there are days where you find the physical limits, where you go deep down. And there are days when you just need to go out and, you know, appreciate nature. And there'll be days where you just want to go out and just shake off the stress and, you know, feel alive. You know, it shows you what it, you know, it shows you, you know, the essence of coming to life, you know. And some days it's just like going and breaking out some sweat, you know. So there are many aspects. So it really depends on what drives one person. For me, it's everything, you know. Each day is different. Like today, you know, I ran 24 kilometers. Today was to suffer, you know. Today was to suffer, you know. So I was going all out. It was humid. There were hills. And, you know, today was a suffer fest. So tomorrow it'll be more like, you know, rhythmic run where you're slow, where you're breathing. So day after will be a social run. You catch up with someone, you know, go for a short jog. And some days it'll be a very spiritual run, you know, like the zone that people say, right? You're in a trance. You don't know what's happening. But you're just there. But you ask what I meant for last 3 hours, nobody even knows. And when you run a marathon, which is about 42.2 kilometers, so most people do cry, right? You know, when they cross the finish line, training for a marathon is something very different. So something happens after 35 kilometers. 35 to 42 is extremely special. So only when a person goes through it and trains for it, they'll know what it means to run the 7 kilometers. So a lot of emotions that are within us that sometimes we don't even understand just comes out, right? It just comes out and you just feel a sense of liberation, a sense of small accomplishment, a sense of something that you want to achieve, you didn't achieve, you were able to achieve through this small little feat, you know? So there are many aspects to it. So there's no this way or that way. So each person is different, each run is different. And most importantly, I read this beautiful line, running is one of the most rawest human emotions and expressions, right? So you feel high, you feel low. And the best part is you're doing with your own body. Right? It's your own joints, your own ligaments, it's your own sweat. You know, there's nothing else. It's just you, right? It's not a vehicle. There's no cycle. There's nothing. It's just you on the ground. That's it.
Right. You just said it's you and the ground. So the ground, it's you and Mother Earth. And when you talk about running, so when did athlete Shreyas become completely coach Shreyas? And what was that journey from athlete to coach? Was it that sabbatical that turned you into coach Shreyas? Or did you notice something internally happening? Because There are many things tangible outside, but moments like these are intangible. They're an experience, like you said, and seems like you've had a magical life from in those moments. So what was that transition like from athlete Shreyas to coach Shreyas?
So prior to that sabbatical, I was more a recreational runner. I was running, but I never, you know, I used to just wake up, go around 15, 20 kilometers, and once a week run 30, 40 kilometers. And yes, I was disciplining my workouts, but overall, in life, I still felt, you know, I had a long way in terms of, you know, the non-cognitive skills that I was talking about. So the sabbatical helped me reflect, you know, upon myself a lot, because now I know I was going to deal with people a lot more. Right? So in workspace, you don't have to really care. You know, you work, if not, you get fired, you go to another job. But here, it's not that way. So I had to refine myself, you know, I had to get into that, you know, depth into myself where I could find that refined, you know, ness in me, you know what I mean, right? So I had to go to the core of my being. And then I realized if I'm coaching, I also need to lead by example. And I'm not coaching kids, I'm coaching adults, I'm coaching people who are accomplished, I'm coaching doctors, I'm coaching engineers, I'm coaching people who went to Stanford, Wharton, the IIMs, the IITs, the Commissioner of Bangalore Police, I've coached him, I've coached IAS officers. So when these people call me a coach, I still feel a sense of, it's like, oh, no, no. It's like every time when somebody called me a coach, and I used to feel a sense of, you know, an embarrassment, you know, oh man, these people are calling me a coach, which means I have to be as authentic as possible. I need to evolve. I cannot have those darker sides in me. You know, I have to seek light so that the darker sides, you know, start vanishing, because these people are looking up to me. And that is when I also realized that if I want to be a good coach, I also need to refine myself into being a better athlete. So I still now lead by example. I wake up, I eat disciplined, I sleep right, you know, I take care of myself very well because everybody's looking up to me. It's a blessing. It's a blessing to be doing this. So my actions and my words had to match. So that's the biggest challenge that I had. And I didn't look at it as a pleasure. I thought it's a privilege. How many people, you know, get this privilege where, you know, you can be a coach and athlete? So I always tell everyone, when they call me a coach, they always look at me as an athlete first. So if this guy can do it, I can do it, right? So I wake up in the morning, I grind it out. I do all my warm-ups, my cool-downs. I manage my time well. I eat right. And so it's easier to do things rather than saying them. So when you do things, people will by default follow you. And you don't have a hard time convincing them by your words, right? So they just look at you. You tell them, they know what you're saying and what you're doing matches. And that will make them believe a lot more. So I can say 100 theories, but when I don't execute it, they don't have the belief in doing it, right? So when I tell what I do, it will make them believe. And that makes a big difference. So I always feel this journey is something with what I was and what I could be. So this athlete and this coach, you know, is bridging that journey.
Okay, what I was to what I could be or what
could
I
be,
am.
Yeah.
So where
what
is
I could still
now?
Be. I'm somewhere in middle. I still have my flaws. I'm still working on them. I still have, like I said, the darker side in me, which is absolutely fine. Which if you do not acknowledge, then you're cheating yourself. Right. So I'm trying to be a lot more authentic. I'm trying to be a lot more non-judgmental. And most importantly, I'm, you know, working towards, I wouldn't say working towards, I'm seeking, you know, to this, it sounds, you know, mumbo and jumbo, but I'm seeking towards this, what do you call this infinite light, you know, which I believe is flowing through me, but I want to realize what it is. And then, you know, I'm liberated. You know, I don't have to worry about who says what or what is going to happen. And I want to have that absolute faith in that infinite light or infinite energy, whatever those things. So I want to liberate myself from fear, anxiety, stress, and not like have that 100% authentic smile and not be affected by negative human emotions, human negative words, so on and so forth. At the same time, not get carried away by the good times and not be bogged down by the bad times. You know, I'm looking at that light which can help me maintain that equanimity. So let's see.
So if the rest of us are walking our talk, Shreyas is running his talk. And in the process of doing that, Shreyas, I'm curious to now ask you, what is angry Shreyas like? What angers Shreyas?
I think lack of integrity, lack of authenticity. And when someone does not keep up their word, these three things. It's okay. I mean, you don't have to please everyone, okay? But if you're not authentic, if you're not, do not carry integrity, you know, something I just can't, you know, it doesn't anger me anymore. But yeah, I would, you know, would not respect that the kind of a person. So your words have to match your actions. If not, just don't tell them.
Okay, so don't promise anything if you're not too sure whether you'll keep it up, is it?
Yeah.
But then there are many things beyond our control, Shreyas. And I think, if not anything else, like some time back, you were talking about how parents and grandparents are today lost in their phones. And empathy is one of the biggest skills they need to teach the children. When it came to the last 2 years, all of us didn't even worry about thinking about it. It naturally came into everything that we are doing, because suddenly all of us realized we are all connected, and the human in our beings emerged, and we were there for people we did not know very well, our neighbors and anyone who needed help. So when we are talking about this space, these 2 years have been transformative for a lot of us. The only fear now is, will we forget the lessons that we learned in the last 2 years? Because slowly life is getting back to a new normal.
Yeah.
And in that process, what has happened to Shreyas in the last 2 years? What have your reflections been? Because you've been through a lot. Like if you draw a curve, maybe the height is big, you and a huge learning curve in all that life has given you, and how beautifully it helped you evolve. So what have your reflections been, Shreyas, and how has the pandemic shifted anything in you?
I mean, yeah, exactly two years and a week ago when the lockdown was announced, the gender curfew, everybody were working home, but what about us? You know, we had outdoor jobs, so stadiums are closed, parks are closed, so people cannot come. And of course, you know, it did worry us initially. But then Zoom worked really well. You know, everybody got on Zoom, training was happening on Zoom. And the first thing that we did was we offered training, whatever I learned over the last 10 years, we offered it for free for 2 months. We wanted to invoke that compassion because we realized everybody has to come together and care for each other. So we want to inspire our community by giving free services and make, you know, everyone really healthy and fit and not lose their mental stability. So because 2 months, everybody was locked down completely. Right. So after that, people started coming out. But a lot of, I mean, we were training about 200, 250 people every day. And people used to look forward for morning sessions because they felt it was a respite. So running about sessions anywhere between 90 minutes to 2 hours, you know, taking them through workouts, pranayama, meditation, some high intensity workouts. We used to have people come and speak on mental strength, resilience, spirituality. So I was doing all this for a couple of months, which, you know, catered to people across communities, and my group grew a lot more. In the process, we also raised a lot of funds because I also wanted to, every year I usually raise funds for one or the other cause. So we raised funds in wave one, that is in 2020, for a particular NGO to you know, help them cater the needy, because many were locked down, they could not go home, people were looking for food. And we also were a part of this initiative where people were running 20 kilometers every day for 20 days. You know, we raised about 20 lakhs for another NGO, which played a huge role in distributing ration kits in rural areas. And then when just things started to hit normal in 2021, and then the wave two, the Delta wave two swept across the country. Wave one, people were not really afraid. People thought, okay, it's just another flu, because we didn't hear deaths, we didn't hear about oxygen shortages, we didn't hear so many ambulances. And just when, you know, things were coming back, even in my family, we were all affected with COVID, and my father was also in the ICU. So my grandmom, who's 80, was affected. My father, who was 60, had COVID. Me and my wife in 30s, we had COVID. My daughter had COVID. And that was a time when it was the first time you really felt really afraid of your life. You know, it was the first time, you know, I've ran in midnight, we cycled in forests, I never been that petrified, you know. And I always felt, you know, even I was kind of a person, if I get a flu or a cold, I would never even bother to take a medication or anything. So once I saw my father, you know, not doing really well, you know, the fear hit me, and we had to run around for MDSWR. And God was kind enough, we got the hospital at the right time. And that inspired me to do a lot more good karma, right? So it was not how much money you had in the bank at that point of time, because it was who you know, the good work that you did. Because I always believe that as humans, it's inevitable that, you know, we will do some bad work intentionally or unintentionally. But we also have the option to do a lot of good work. And it said that, of course, in our part of the world, in India, you know, we write the Kundli or the birth, the Jatakam, when you're born, right? So the ancient Rishi said that, yes, what they write at that point is true. Because when you're born, according to your time and your stars, all right? So they're writing the period of your life based on that. That is 50%. But from your born till wherever you are, you have all the freedom to perform the actions, and those actions can alter that destiny, you know, of your birth. So, and that's what Mahabharata is all about, you know, where, of course, we'll do some bad things, but you also have to do enough of right things to, you know, make up for the bad things that you did. So that was one of the biggest realizations I had. You know, let me create a lot of good karma. You know, let me spread that. So me and another 3-4 people got together. We set up a 130-bed, hospital. It was his initiative. So we raised about close to 50 lakh rupees in just a month. Through his initiative and my contacts, and all this while we had COVID. So we're sitting, connecting with people, and we were doing that. And just 2-3 months, everybody were there for everyone. And like I said, I had a 200 member people group, and some people lost their loved ones as well. So we helped people who wanted remdesivir, we funded them, and it was we saw the best of humanity. And like you said, my fear is that we wouldn't need one more such kind of incident to bring the best out of us, right? And people are very appreciative, you know. But now again, we're slowly moving back to the darker side, you know. But again, as the race and the fear catches up, right? You know, we are again running into that. So I feel that we shouldn't be going that way. We should learn from this. We should, live a lot more sustainable life. Live, let live. And most importantly, not only compassionate to human beings, but compassionate to, you know, the trees, you know, to the species around. And without them, we don't exist. So the coexistence is extremely important. So if we can take that, and we all say we all love our kids, right? And we made kids at our own will. So it is equal responsibility to leave, if not a better world, at least a world that we inherited, so that, you know, they enjoy their life and they pass it on. Like I said, there is... The biggest fear is that, you know, we may forget what we learned. And I believe if we forget that, we may not have enough of time to, you know, relearn and readjust and move on. I think God has given us a great chance to recoup and live a better life.
Yeah. You know, this recoil that happened in the last 2 years shifted a lot for a lot of us. And I think, like you said, we understood that if nature wants, she can take control. And the way she did, and she took charge of everything she needed to, I think human beings understood who's the true boss. Now, talking about boss, as a coach, you are the boss on the field when your coaches are around you running. So what has been the most motivating question or the most shocking question any coachee of yours has asked you? And what has been the most humbling question any of your coaches have asked you? Before we go there, how old is your youngest coachee and how old is your oldest coachee?
My oldest coachee is about 64, 65. Youngest is about 17. So I have a 50-year gap almost. Yeah, almost close to about 50-year gap. So, I mean, nothing really, you know. No question has shocked me, but I've had a lot of humble moments, you know, where very accomplished people give a lot of space to me in their lives. They put me across to other people very genuinely without any expectations. And I only turn up to do the best what I can without no expectations. So they do the same. And no weird questions. Nobody's asked me anything weird. So I've had great relationship with everyone. The 1,000 people I've coached, I never had any animosity, any issues. It's just been that way. So of course, you know, you can't please everyone. I'm not saying that I'm the best. Some people may be disappointed, but I've never run into any kind of issues or arguments or none of it, because I say, okay, you win, I lose. That's all right, if that's going to make you happy. But a lot of humbling moments, a lot of humbling moments. One of them being is, I don't know if you know Annamalai sir. So he's the IPS officer. So I trained him for 2 years.
Okay.
So he invited me on my birthday to his house. We spent about 6 hours together reading about books. So every 6 months, though, he's somewhere else, he sends a book or two for me on coaching. And another very nice moment was ex-commissioner Mr. Bhaskar Rao. So he was the commissioner of police in wave one. So prior to that, he was ADGP KSRP. So he gave me an opportunity to train about 16,000 people, you know, across 3 weeks. You know, we had to train the trainer program. And out of all this, the most humbling experience was when we worked in Karwar. So this was just, you know, this was in my sabbatical. So in Karwar, you know, Karavali Utsav happens, you know, it's an annual affair that happens every year in December.
Yeah.
And when I had the sabbatical, you know, in Kannada there's a saying, you know, Kelsa idonge, unde kelsa, kelsa ildironge, madidilla kelsa. So I said, okay, any job I will do. So somebody said, can you go to Karwar? One of my friends said, you know, I know the district magistrate, so they want to organize a run as a part of Karavali Utsav on the beach run. They want to make it a little big, so on and so forth. This was in 2016. And I was coaching, but I was not busy. And then I said, all right. So I had my friend. So he also has a great story. And both did want some money, you know. Okay, I said, we'll go give it a try. And then we went and got on Karwar on a morning. Empty place, small place, deserted, just one building here. Now at least a little better. About 6 years back, there's hardly anything. I said, who will come and run here? You know, Rabindranath Tagore Beach. All right, everybody go to Goa. Right, how can we get people from here? So, and they gave us only 3 weeks time. And I said, we'll do what we can. And I'm telling you, this is a guy, you know, who was supposed to be in Geneva, you know, who's left everything and coming here from MNC, you know, to Karwar, and then, you know, holding
the beaches.
Yeah, holding, you know, going store. ಇಲ್ಲಿ ಮ್ಯಾರಥಾನ್ ಏನಕ್ಕೆ ಮ್ಯಾರಥಾನ್ ನೋಡ್ತೀರಾ, ಕಾಸು ಕೊಡ್ಬೇಕಾ, ಏನು ಕೊಡ್ಬೇಕು, ಯುನೋ ಆನ್ಸರಿಂಗ್ ಎವ್ರಿ ಒನ್ ಇನ್ ದಟ್ ಹೀಟ್, ಯುನೋ ಆಫ್ಟರ್ನೂನ್ ಹೀಟ್ ಇನ್ ಕಾರ್ವಾರ್, ಯುನೋ 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock ಆನ್ ದಿ ಬೀಚ್ ಸೈಡ್ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಟು ಆಲ್ ದೋಸ್ ವಿಲೇಜಸ್. ಬಟ್ ವಿ ಪುಟ್ ಇನ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ 1,000 ಪೀಪಲ್ ಆನ್ ದ ಬೀಚ್ ಆಫ್ಟರ್ ಇನ್ ತ್ರೀ ವೀಕ್ಸ್. ವಿ ಟ್ರಾವೆಲ್ ಅಕ್ರಾಸ್, ವಿ ವೆಂಟ್ ಟು ಸಿರ್ಸಿ, ವಿ ವೆಂಟ್ ಟು ಯುನೋ, ಇಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ದಿ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಅಮೇಝಿಂಗ್ 21 ಡೇಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಮೈ ಲೈಫ್. ಐ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಟೆಲ್ ಯು, ಸೀಯಿಂಗ್ ಕರ್ನಾಟಕ, ಉತ್ತರ ಕನ್ನಡ ಡಿಸ್ಟ್ರಿಕ್ಟ್, the remotest parts of Karnataka, enjoying it to the core, you know, interacting with those kids. We felt so humble. I mean, there's so much that we complain about, so much.
Yeah.
And there was one driver, I remember, I told him, you know, we wanted to go to Palalim. You know, we had finished the work. He was there for us since morning from 8-9 o'clock in the morning. He said 5 o'clock, he'll drop off. I said, 5 o'clock, Elsa, too, let's go to Goa. It's just about 20 kilometers from there, and we'll come back. We'll just go and come back by 9 o'clock. He said, no, I have to go home. I said, we'll pay you another 1,000 rupees extra. He said, no, I do not want your money. My wife will be waiting for dinner with fish curry and rice. That is my most important meal of the day. I said, in a month, you want 10,000 rupees. All right, I will pay you, 1,000 rupees for 2 hours. You know, you come, you can always have day. He said, no. That is the most important meal of the day. He said, he earns only 10,000 to 12,000 rupees a month. He says, government gives 5 kg rice free and fish is cheap. He says, to hell with your money, I want to go home. And I was like, he appreciates his family so much. And we call them, you know, all sorts of words. You know, we call them countryside people. And he says that is the most important meal of the day, and his wife and his children are waiting for that. He says, I don't need money. You tell this to IT guy that you will give him double OT money, he'll sit and work. Yeah. Right. And that appreciation was so phenomenal. It was a wow, you know, moment. And then we worked with the Siddhi kids. You know, the Siddhi kids are, you know, the African kid, the Africans who were brought to India, I think, a few centuries ago. So we met them, you know, we got them to run on the beach side. So we organized the event for 3 years until the pandemic hit. So it was a phenomenal experience, you know, being on the beach all night, putting up the stage, route marking. And we wanted volunteers. So the people who I coach, you know, these guys came and stayed with me all night setting up the event. And I mean, I can tell you that life is there. Here, I think we just, I don't know. It's very difficult to say, but there's a lot of life on the countryside. It's you're more close to nature. You're more close to struggles. You appreciate the right things. You appreciate the value of food. You appreciate the value of family. You appreciate the value of, you know, even having a fan or a TV at home, which we all take for granted, and yet we are very less appreciative. So that was the most humbling experience in my coaching aspect. Yeah.
Yeah. And nature is always the best teacher. Was there any lessons from nature that you remember in days that you'll never forget? Because you were by the seaside, you were on the beaches. I mean, nature must have been at her best in the evenings, mornings, early mornings.
I mean, it's very difficult to comprehend because I've been to the Himalayas for 5 years. Four or five times over the last 4 or 5 years. Yeah, we've done a lot of high altitude trekking. We've been on the beach side. We are a part of nature. We just think we are away from it. Even I'm nature, right? Yeah. And nature can be both merciful and also fearful, all right? So do not take her mercy for granted, all right? So know that you are a part of her. Without you, you're nothing. But at the same time, the best part of nature is it just goes on. It just does what it has to do. Sun comes up. That's what you sit by the beach. You know, we spent 72 hours sitting by the beach because we have to stay there and organize the event, you know, from afternoon, midnight, from afternoon sun to, you know, the midnight moon. It just goes on doing what it has to do without any expectation. So you do your dharma and just leave it to that, you know, the unknown, which is the source of our existence. I think that's what we learn from nature. You just do what you have to do.
Have you always been so philosophical, Shreyas?
there's nothing philosophical about this. What is there to be philosophical about? You just have to be a little aware of what's
happening. Every answer you gave, every moment of life you were talking about, you brought in a very beautiful spiritual element, okay? And all of us know that we are spiritual beings on a human journey, but very few realize the meaning of this statement. But you seem so connected to that side. Were you always like this, or were there moments in life that made you aware of this connect and the power of this connect?
I think right from childhood, I always feared the unknown, you know, the conscience or God, you know, different phases, we call it different things, right? So, you know, as kids, you know, if you're not afraid of your parents, at least you're afraid of God, right? And then start asking questions about existence, you know, in my school. I was like, it always came in school. I was like, nobody's appreciating me. I have so much of energy, you know. Why is nobody appreciating me? And is life all about getting first rank, getting marks? These questions were always there. You know, that is where it all started. You know, I know I'm on the overweight side, but I can still play for 12 hours. I know many people who are so fit and they can't, you know, I always used to think that way. Or am I so dumb, you know? But I know I'm not dumb, but why am I not succeeding? You know, the so-called success. Why am I not getting these opportunities? I was really good at social sciences. You know, I was very good at writing. You know, I was very good at articulating stuff. But all the cream of the jobs only went to people who scored marks in math and science. And I mean, with all due respect to them, I never found them really smart. All right, I just found them like robots. So these questions started then. And then I think a lot of questioning came when I think in college, basically, my college was about 15, 16 kilometers from home. So college used to start at 7:30 in the morning. So which means I had to wake up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And so 4 o'clock, nobody's waking up. So you're spending a lot of time alone. There is no mobile phone. There is nothing.
Yeah.
Right. So in 2002, and nobody used to drop me anywhere. So 5:30 was the only bus in my house. You miss it, you're done. So that bus used to go from my house to KR Market. From there, another 4 kilometers, I had to walk. The moment you start spending a lot of time with yourself, right? You know, from 4 o'clock to 7:30, I'm just spending time with myself. And then you were asking, you know, everyone of my age is all nicely sleeping at home. They're at 4 o'clock. And 7 o'clock prayer starts. All right. And then 7:30, I'm hallucinating and I'm hungry. All right. I always wanted to eat. But then pocket money is only 10 rupees. And then next to that was some roti place. I used to give one roti and some dal at 9:30 in the morning for 10 bucks. But I was still hungry. Then again, next thing was, oh, college finished. I have to, you know, if I miss this bus, another 3 kilometers I have to walk. Then I come home. So, spending a lot of time by myself, right? So I think those are the times when, you know, I was tripping on these thoughts. All right. So, yeah, so that's how I started questioning a lot. So, and I always, one thing was, I mean, though we come from a meat eating background, I voluntarily a whole food plant-based diet. I try to avoid animal products as much as possible. I don't even use leather. So I always had this thing of empathy and compassion by nature. So once you have that, you just start questioning. Like everybody, you know, in our community eats that. So everybody tried to make me eat, so nobody could succeed. It's been about 13, 14 years since I dropped it. So, and then I said, people are fighting over, like, today's discussion was jhatka meat versus halal meat. Is this even a discussion? You know,
yeah.
Have we fallen to this level and media is covering 24 hours? This is common sense, right? It's, I mean, I understand that, you know, if you're living in far off jungle, you know, you have to fight for meat, but you're sitting here, you know, you have the access to best of the grains and best of the healthiest of foods. And today's debate that is raging on and, you know, killing people's time, you know, fueling communal issues and so on and so forth. And so these questions were always there. You know, what does it take for a human being just to be aware of what is around him? You know, of course, there are a lot of things that, you know, there are a lot of things that happen in the mind, but you're not the mind. The moment you start listening to the mind, we're finished. So we have the awareness that moves around the mind. So wherever your awareness goes, you know, there is where your energy goes, but you always have the power to put your energy where you want. So I felt I put it in places that made me genuinely happy, you know. So yeah, there's no straight answer to it, but I think one leads to another, right?
That's true. And in the age of fad diets and everyone wondering about intermittent fasting and keto diet and everything else, you name every possible diet in the world, Indians are falling prey to it and trying everything, to extreme liquid diets. So somebody who's a runner like you, who believes in expending the energy of what is there within, what would you recommend on a very simple scale as far as eating goes?
If you ask me, eat the three principles, you know, when it comes to eating. Eat what is locally, all right? If you are from Karnataka, if your ancestors lived here, so your body's adapted to eating ragi, jolled roti, you know, some rice. Rice is also a recent trend. And a lot of fruits and vegetables. Karnataka is always traditionally known for its fruits and veggies. Second thing is try to eat, you know, less chemical food. You know, try to, you know, eat more organic food, you know, which is free of chemicals. Third thing is avoid processed food. So these are the three principles. And always eat 70%. Yeah. So don't eat 100%. Whatever your 70% is, you always feel, have some space. You want to eat 5 days a day, eat it. But never feel full, never feel lethargic. Even if you're eating, you should be able to go and run a 5 kilometers. You should not feel so full that, you know, you have to go crawl in the bed and you're feeling sleepy. So that is my fundamental eating. All right. So 70% of eating. And ensure that, you know, in your diet, 70 to 80% of what you're eating is a lot of fruit and vegetables. All right. And keep carbohydrates a little on the lesser side. I mean, even If you go towards the villages, right, in Karnataka, right, you know, they work 12 hours a day, right? Nobody eats fancy food, and look at them, they're ripped, they're strong, they hardly get any issues, right? So extremely important to know your life, your activities. And most people will know how they feel after eating a certain kind of food, right? So listen to your body. It's extremely important to listen to your body. There's a standard diet. That's what the American Europeans want to go behind. They want to make everything standardized. But the moment you make standardized, what do you become? You become, you know, you're growing up in a farm. Right? That's what they want to do. They want to set standard for everything. Then you lose your, what you call as uniqueness, right? So try to understand what is good for you. So extremely important. So your body will definitely tell, your moods will tell how you feel when you eat what. There's no straight answer to it, but eat traditional, local, least processed, least chemical foods. That's it.
Okay. You've given us a lot already, Shreyas, but if there are three life lessons that you'd like to leave us with, what would they be?
So it's very difficult to say. I don't think I've arrived at that point of life to, you know, share any lessons in life, but what I can say, what I follow, always work for a larger cause, a cause beyond you, have the right intentions, and be truthful to your conscience. That's it. These are three life lessons that I would say. Yeah.
Thank you, Shreyas. They're beautiful.
Thanks
just
a lot.
Like the beautiful human being that stays within you. And may you continue to thrive, because I think people like you are very rare. And maybe it's a speciality with those who run. You're so in touch with who you are that you end up making the world a far more beautiful place than it is currently, and it should be deservedly. So thanks so much for giving your time and sharing your personal journey on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. It's been a pleasure listening to you, and all the very best. May you continue to inspire.
Thanks, Rashmi. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate you having me over. Always, I feel happy to share my story. If even it can inspire someone to pick up running or become fitter, or even at least, you know, go beyond what they're thinking. So I'd be very happy. So thanks a lot. Keep up the great work until we meet again.
Thank you, Shreyas. All right.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.